Your boy GameCube, that dude, of course, aka the Black Ninja, and we are back with a brand new episode, man. It feels good to be back. Oh man, I had a crazy weekend with the Still Outside event. It was everything, you know, I really hoped it would be, to be honest with you. And we'll get to it, but man, hip hop really has been taking some blows, man. So I wanted to start the episode by saying rest in power to DJ Mr. C. Of course, he is the legendary New York DJ. Probably biggest credit and most well known for being Big Daddy Kane's DJ. And then also kind of being responsible for helping Biggie get into the game and kind of, you know, somewhat discovering. Obviously, he didn't discover him 100%, but he was that connect in the industry that kind of helped procure Biggie a spot on the label. So definitely wanted to say rest in peace to DJ Mr. C. And then also rest in peace, Rico Wade, pioneer for Southern hip hop. Definitely pioneer. I mean, pioneer for hip hop, honestly, and helped usher in. No pun intended, because I do believe he worked with Usher as well. But no pun intended, helped you know, kind of usher in Atlanta and the South into the hip hop stratosphere. So you know, definitely Rico Wade, you know, obviously one of the founding members of the Dungeon family, which from that tree you get Goody Mob, you get Outkast, and you get Future and TLC. Am I missing anybody? I don't think so. But for those who don't know Goody Mob, that's the group that CeeLo was a part of before he went solo. So lots of talent came through that the basement of Rico Wade, and you know, it's sad to see you know, some of our legends going early. You know, I mean, what we would consider early, right? So yeah, I wanted to play a couple of things to start the episode, just kind of honoring them. Of course, you guys know I'm a big supporter of Cypher Sounds, the Peter Rosenberg podcast, One Ep Is Life. And Mr. C definitely played an integral role in that show, you know, kind of being the DJ for Hot 97. So he was always in the building whenever they would shoot and record Juan Epp, or at the time Juan Epstein. So he was on the show a lot, and that's how I kind of got to know Mr. C, and you know, his importance to the game and his importance to the hip hop, and how you know, Cypher Sounds and Rosenberg, both being DJs themselves, how much they looked up to Mr. C. So, you know, obviously he was very talented with the turntables. So I just want to play this real quick, and their latest episode kind of honoring Mr. C. So
LeBron, for all those that are maybe young and don't know Mr. C, hip hop legend, was the DJ. It's funny because I always say he was the DJ, Big Daddy Kane's DJ, but they were more partners. It was really a group. C and Kane were a group, but it was just called Big Daddy Kane. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't just a hired help. He was, like, part of the organization. Great DJ for Big Daddy Kane. And then just a Brooklyn native. And then gets the credit for discovering Biggie, right? He says often he didn't discover Biggie. Biggie was brought to him by his friend, DJ 50 Grand. But basically, Mr. C brought Biggie to Puff when he was at Uptown Records. Puff signed him to Uptown Records, and then Puff left, started his own label, Bad Boy Records. Mr. C on that first album is associate executive producer. So, like, when you look at Wikipedia, those are the two big Mr. C credits, right? The Where's Brooklyn At freestyle, with Big Daddy Kane performing at Madison Square Garden with Biggie and Tupac rhyme back to back. That was because of Mr. C. Mr. C invited them. Mr. C set up the recording, press record, had the tape. That was all because of Mr. C.
I use the words to describe him like 50 Grand was Biggie's DJ.
Yeah.
C was the connector they needed.
Yeah.
C was the connector. You got to... C was the one who was in the industry at that time. He already was making his way. He had done things.
Yeah. Mr. C, I said this often. Mr. C is the first hip-hop celebrity that I ever met.
So, yeah, man. Just kind of give a little back history on why, you know, he was important. And just kind of seeing the feedback from everyone around hip hop is definitely a legendary DJ for sure, no doubt. You know, he you know, a lot of people are saying that no one matched his energy. No one could match the type of energy that he had. You know, when it came to DJing and picking the right songs. I don't know if I'm going to play this. Oh, here you go. So here's an example, right? Where he kind of pushes the envelope and does things that, you know, not all DJs can do. So he definitely does this thing here. Hold on.
There's a bunch of DJs that's on this boat. There's no egos. There's no I'm better than you. You better than me.
I like that.
Everybody's supporting everybody.
That's
all
right.
It's all love.
That's right.
Make some noise for the great DJ Kid Capri in the building. Make some noise for DJ Epps in the building. Make some noise for DJ Diamond, the artist in the building. But I really haven't heard nobody play this artist on the boat.
Nina.
So I'm going to take this risk and I'm going to play it.
Come on.
I'm going to play. I'm playing him tonight. Don't blame him. Blame the parents. Don't blame him. Blame the fucking parents. I'm playing him tonight. I don't give a fuck. And guess what? I'm playing this shit too.
So yeah, definitely doing things that not everybody was doing. So,
1994, Mr. C was my DJ. From 10th grade to the Daddy's Home album, Mr. C was my DJ. From cursing me out about touching the turntables at a park jam, all the way to cursing me out about not calling him for a photo shoot, Mr. C was my DJ. I remember this one time, the God Infinite was like, yo, your man C talking real reckless about you be hurrying up to bounce with chicks right after the show and leaving them there alone to carry all them cows on cases and whatnot. And I'm like, damn, C, right? Yo, Inf, I need you to help C with the cows on cases from now on. Inf like, yo, what the fuck? Right? But, you know, with family, you know, You got to be there for them. And C was always there for me. And if you don't believe me, ladies and gentlemen, meet the finisher, DJ Mr. C.
So that, of course, was Big Daddy Kane talking about DJ Mr. C. And that clip that that we just played is actually him at a Big Daddy Kane concert. And there's literally like one person in the whole entire arena that is sitting. And Mr. C. found him and saw him and called him out and wouldn't start the show. It wouldn't keep going until this dude got up along with everybody else. So... you know, that's just the type of energy that he knew needed to be present, you know, for everyone to have a good time. So definitely rest in peace to DJ Mr. C, a.k.a. The Finisher. One last clip for you guys. This one here is... hold on 1 second. Let me try to find it here for you guys. This one here is Rico Wade. Hold on, let me find it for you guys. Thought I saved it here. Nope. 1 second. You guys are very patient. I appreciate you. Hope you guys are having a wonderful day while I try and find this. To bring it to you proper. All right, let's see. Guess I'll be editing this out. Let's see. All right, there is Mr. C. Oh, where'd it go? All right. Oh, there it is, of course. As soon as I started to click out. All right, here you go. This is Rico Wade on the Quest Love Supreme. I'm just kind of talking about artistry and the hip-hop and some of the things that you know, he'd like to see from artists.
Originality is the most important thing because it inspires and motivates.
Don't buy nobody shit.
Yeah, so if you come up with something, even if you didn't do it the best, you just presented it to the world. So somebody else is going to rip it another day or whatever. But right in these first little 18 months, they can't come behind you with it. It's got to be your lane only right now. So as many breaks as we had, it was up to just making records that coincided or whatever. Right. But I would... That was our lifeline. Once we made it into the music industry, we felt like as long as we were digging, we were reading books and we were learning. And that's what New York had forgot for a little while. They got caught up into the...
fucking real.
They done out. And that's why the South got in there. Because we didn't... It looked like they let us in with Master P and Cash Money. It was like, that's because they fucked up and didn't fuck with us early on.
Yeah.
But when we would... We had a brother. That's why it's called the East Coast. Because Atlanta's on the East Coast.
Yeah.
DC's on the East Coast. It's like all these places are reminiscent of hip-hop, even though we give it all the credit to Bronx. Give all the credit to New York, Brooklyn, because... It's deservingly so. Like we always looked at New York as the father, yeah, and Los Angeles as the mother. And we were the child that came from it. That's why he said from neglect.
Right.
That's where Atlanta came from. Yeah. The fact that neglect was enough to try to figure it out on your own.
Mm. Yeah, man. Hip hop definitely is going to be missing those two legends right there. For sure. Rest easy. So, yeah, man, We went to the Still Outside event, and it was awesome, man. Truly. Like, it really was. You know what I mean? I don't have a whole lot to say, like, criticism-wise. So I pulled up, like, so I had two things I was going on. I had to shoot out to my man Valid's birthday celebration, so I wanted to make sure I stopped in and said what's up to him. But he was having his birthday celebration the same time and date, same day, same time, basically, as the Still Outside event. So my original plan, right, I was talking with the people over at the Black Mafia Battle League, just trying to, you know, figure out if there's re-entry, all that kind of good stuff, the logistics, to be able to cover the event. And my original plan was, all right, I'm going to show up early to Stadium Nightlife, set, you know, kind of set up whatever I need, whatever I could set up, if I could set up anything. At least kind of get the layout of how everything was going to be, because doors were supposed to open at 3, and then the battles, I believe, started at 4. And then my man Valid's birthday celebration started at 4. So I'm running late, you know what I mean? I had, trying to take care of these kids and do everything, and you know how to go. Had church in the morning. Had a couple things I had to do before I was leaving for the day to you know, cover the events. I ended up getting there later than I wanted to. I wanted to get there like 2:30 and see if I could get in anyways, because they were saying, you know, media can get there at 3. I was going to be like, yo, let me see if I can get up in there like 2:30. I ended up not getting there until almost 3:30. And I was like, of course, there was a line almost wrapped around the corner. So those y'all that's from the Clem or anybody that was there. So Stadium Nightlife in the front, and it was wrapping almost to the church. That's like a couple, you know, I mean, like two buildings down. The church just on the corner there. I forget what side street that is. It used to be by New Image, kind of kitty corner from that, or cross street from that gas station. That's right there by the high school. Man, what street is that? That's not Walnut. No, it's not Walnut. Walnut's closer to downtown. I'm tripping. I don't know why I can't think of what street that is. That runs right up next to the high school and then takes you through by the barbershop, by the tax place, and then there's the church before you cross over and hit northbound Gresham. Anyways, I'm getting lost in the sauce. So anyways, it was wrapped around the corner to the church. And I was like, yo, I'm going to be waiting here forever before I even get in. So I was like, all right, why don't I just let... I asked the security, well, shout out to the people running security, Cal Security. They was in there. They was in there deep, and they was ready for whatever. strapped up, ready. Yeah, I mean, but they was all cool peoples. So I talked to them, like, yo. First off, I was like, you know, is everyone waiting in this line, or do you guys have a separate entrance for VIP and media? And he was like, yes, everyone's waiting through this line, but if you are VIP, you can come through. But funny enough, like, I really wasn't thinking at the time, because they definitely let me know, like, hey, when you get there, just tell them your name and show them your ID and VIP, and then you'll get in. But I wasn't thinking, so I was just like, oh, okay, all right. So I gotta wait in this line. And I was like, let me just shoot downtown to Valid's birthday event, and then I'll come back. And then hopefully the line will be died down. Well, so I did that, you know what I mean? Ran downtown, said what up to my boy Valid, and then for a brief second, then kind of dipped and went back to this event. And when I got there, there was a short line, and man, praise God, because I'm pretty sure I was like within the last like 10 people to get in the building. So had I like waited another 10 minutes to leave, or 5 minutes to leave, or waited even to you know, try to see if I could get in, and then decided to leave while after waiting in line initially, I probably wouldn't have been able to get in the building even after paying a ticket, you know, already having my ticket front. I mean, I probably would have been fine just telling them, hey, you know what I mean? I'm sure they probably would let me in. But they definitely was like looking at people behind me and was like, y'all it. We about to shut this door down because there's too many people. So finally made it in. Shout out to Sierra. Definitely a pleasure to work with. Honestly, all of Cal's people. Shout out to everyone that was working with Calico for the back mafia. Battle League. People that work there, the people that work for the league, the people that work security, like everybody was courteous and nice, and then obviously everyone from Stadium Nightlife. But I already kind of knew some of those people because, like I said, this is right there in my hometown. So yeah, man, it was really cool. Shout out to We Outside Podcast too. I kind of kicked it with them. In the corner, actually, you know, it's kind of funny is because there was a decent amount of like big names in battle rap there, like Marv One and Questlove Cody showed up. They was in the building. I was in the section over there by like I said, by We Outside. I'm trying to think who else was over there. Honestly, just a bunch of different people. Like Fat Ray showed up and he kind of went over there and saying what's up to people. Hell of a was in the building. I'm trying to think who else was up in the building. Courtney Bell was in the building. I saw Bazaar in the building. I'm trying to think who else was up in there that I saw. Young Miles was in the building. I mean, it doesn't really go by Young Miles anymore, but he was in the building. He was kind of in the section that we were in. I just ended up finding like the perfect It was honestly the perfect spot for sound because I was kind of by the speakers, and what little bit you were catching off the speakers from the battle rappers, you know, you were, I caught it all. So definitely have audio of a lot of the rap battles. And I think on our Patreon episode, I'm going to actually like decipher the battle, and for some of y'all, the bars kind of went over your head, especially a lot of the Detroit artists, and even some of the other outside artists, you know, tried to do their homework, and so they were mentioning Detroit and Detroit lingo, and it just, yeah, I mean, it didn't necessarily, if you don't know, you wouldn't know, you know what I mean, so. On my Patreon episode, I will definitely decipher those. Was able to snag an interview with Reed Dollars, so you guys will hear that at some point. It was a short interview. Definitely missed a few battles though, trying to wait for him. I know he was trying, and I'm not saying that like I have any ill will towards Reed Dollars or anything. He was very gracious to be able to, you know, give me a few minutes to interview him, because I'm pretty sure he didn't really do any other interviews other than like right before he battled, he kind of did like a quick interview with Ill Will, who was the host. So, He he was outside. And if you've ever been to Stadium Nightlife Club, so actually I hadn't been there in years, to be honest with you. Probably since I might have been once while I was Stadium Nightlife. Then I think last time I was there, it was different owners and it was called something else. It was called the Bank or something like that. And I had been a few times while I was the Bank. But it's been a minute. So they definitely had redone a few things. But you go in the basement, they got a bar down there, some, you know, seats and everything. And then they had, the banner set up with the picture, you know, they already had the ring light there, to kind of shine it, you know, so it was nice and bright for the pictures. So I was like, all right, bet, you know, it's the perfect spot. You know what I mean? I can, give Stadium Nightlife some pub, you know what I mean? Some free marketing, and I'll do the interview right here. Plus, because they had the Black Mafia Battle League banner set up, but it was upstairs, like where the battles were going on. So even if I wanted to, like, it just wouldn't have been a good spot to be trying to do that, because they were taping the event still outside of it. It was pay-per-view, so we weren't supposed to be streaming anything, obviously. So my goal was like, yo, I'm gonna try to get interviews. And then, you know, obviously anytime I go to any event like this, I already know your boy gonna get some audio. So yeah, I was trying to do that. Got my little spot. And I kind of looked to see, all right, well, who's down here? And at first, when I first went outside to see, there was nobody really. Actually, Mac Myron was there at first when I first went downstairs. But I was still kind of, I wouldn't even pay attention. I had said, like, they were talking about something, and I happened to be by him, and I think I said something, you know, kind of slightly eavesdropping and joining the conversation. And we laughed about something. I don't even remember what it was. And then he kind of got up and kept it moving. I think he was about to battle some. So there was a few people that were down there that I was talking, you know, but I wasn't quite ready. I was still kind of scoping out and seeing what I was trying, where I was going to be able to do what I was trying to do. And then I, you know, got my little spot. At that point, there was really nobody in, not really, not yet, right? So there wasn't really anybody down in the VIP. I think this was right after the Osolo battle. I went down there. The Osolo Black Fonz battle, which that was fire. So got my spot. Go outside. Still in the VIP section, but the outside of the VIP section. See who's out there. Nobody's really out there. A couple entourages. And then I see Tay Rock come down. But Tay Rock, when he came down, he definitely looked super focused. Like, I could see him kind of talking to himself, and he wasn't really... talking to anyone else. He was just kind of, and then kind of, I could see his head kind of moving, so, you know, back and forth. So I could tell he was like, you know, going over his rhymes and making sure everything was tight before his battle. So I was like, all right, I'm not gonna mess with Tay Rock, because he's, I'm gonna let him focus. I keep looking around. I see Reed Dollars kind of in the corner with some of his homies, some of his boys, So, you know, I'm still kind of looking around because, you know, they're all talking and stuff. So I'm like, I'm not about to bother him while he's talking. And then Tay Rock ends up, like, leaving. Nobody else really comes downstairs. I see a bunch of people kind of upstairs. Like, I see Osolo upstairs. I see Bizarre upstairs. I'm like, dang, man, I guess I should have went upstairs and kind of came outside and see who I could have talked to. And then I kind of go back inside and I see who's inside. Nobody's inside. So I'm like, all right, well, I put that Denzel. I'm like, I'm leaving here with something. I ain't coming. I'm leaving here with something. We leaving here with something. So I was like, all right, time to boss up. And I go over there to Reed Dawes. I'm like, hey, what's up? You got a second? I'm like, oh, you know, or no, I'm sorry. I go over there. I say, what's up, Reed? I was like, you got a second? And he's like, yeah. I was like, how you doing, man? My name is Matthew, a.k.a. See, I'm telling y'all my name. How you doing? My name is GameCube That Dude. And, you know, I have a local podcast here. I just wondered if you had a few minutes to do a brief interview with you. He's like, yeah, of course. I said, all right, cool, man. I'm set up inside the room here whenever you get a second. He's like, all right, cool. So then, you know, 15 minutes go by, 20 minutes go by, 30 minutes go by. I'm like, all right, I guess I got to go back out there. So I go back out there. I'm like, hey, man, you know, I'm all set up in there whenever you get a second. Just be brief, like maybe five to 10 minutes. He said, oh, yeah, my bad, man. I'll be in there in a sec. So then like another 15 minutes go by. And then he comes in. Honestly, I don't even know if he might have still forgot that he was going to do it. But I was literally right as you come in and come around the corner. You couldn't miss me. And that's part of why I set up right there, too, right? It was right next to the bar. Like, you couldn't miss me. And so he saw me. He's like, oh, okay, cool. What's up? And then we did the interview, and you know, he was very gracious. And shout out to Bay Lee. I apologize. I'll be honest. I'm probably, if I had to do like a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you watch every rap battle, you try to go to every event. You're very well versed in everything that they're talking about and all the different battle leagues, battle rappers. You're up on it, everything. You know, you got the caffeine app, you got everything, you got all the apps. I would probably, and like one being, you know, what is battle rap? How is that different than rap? So I'm obviously not that, and I'm obviously not 10. So I would probably put myself about a 6 or 7. You know, 5 being the kind of like midway point. I know maybe a little bit more than the average battle rap fan. Or I should, you know, just battle rap, average hip-hop fan. But I'm definitely not into the depths of... I wouldn't consider myself top tier with it, battle rap fan. I'm a little bit more in the know than just your standard hip hop fan. So I apologize because there was definitely a few artists on the card that I didn't know, and I didn't even necessarily know what they look like. So I apologize to Bay Lee because I definitely heard her battle. But I couldn't see her because I was kind of in the back. So I thought she was someone else that I saw down there. So I apologize. Because the reason I say this is because her and Reed Dollars, like she, that's one of her favorite battle rappers. Like I also forgot to say that Reed Dollars is one of my favorite battle rappers, which, you know, you'll hear in the interview, like how long I've been rocking with Reed Dollars. So you know, she said what's up to him, and you know, he took a picture and everything. And honestly, I should have, at that moment, I should have taken the second to be like, oh, you know, I should have just said, I should have apologized in person, like, hey, you know, you've been sitting here this whole time, I should have asked you for an interview, you know. And I apologize that I didn't ask her. I honestly, at that point, I felt a little awkward being like, oh, you've been sitting here. I didn't say nothing to you, and I apologize. So I'm apologizing now. I hope, you know, I don't know if this is gonna make it to you or not, but you killed it, by the way. Fire that totem pole by totem poles. That bar was crazy. Fire. So, you know, shout out to her. And I think also, so it, I felt a little awkward being like, hey, you know, do you mind doing the interview now? Now that I know who you are. And at the same time, I also, there was a few battles that I definitely wanted to see, and I didn't want to miss them. So I definitely wanted to see the Joey Linwood, Geechee Gotti, and I definitely wanted to see Bill Collector versus Tay Rock. And I missed X Factor. I wanted to see that one. So I missed that one. You know, trying to hold out for the Reed Dollars interview, which I'm glad I did, because that was really cool to do. I'm gonna let you guys in on a little secret. That was definitely my first street interview. So that was fun. And you can hear it too, because I'm definitely stumbling over some words. I didn't have any cue cards. This was all off the dome, freestyle. So yeah, that, like I said, it was a really cool event. Really, I had a good time. Definitely recommend going if you're just, you know, if you're a hip hop fan, but you've never been to a battle rap event. Definitely, I think that you should go to at least one. Because it's the closest you're gonna get probably to what it felt like in the late, you know, in the 70s, mid 70s to early 80s, or really that first decade, right? So that, like, 72, 73 to 84, 85, that first decade of, you know, in the parks, on the block, you know, DJ hooking up the equipment to light post. Here's my crew. That's your crew. Now let's see what you can do. Yeah, I mean, let's see who's got the best bars. Like, this is battle rap is probably the closest you're gonna get to that feeling of how, you know, hip hop started. And that competition, that healthy competition and camaraderie and that it generates, that battle rap generates. Definitely probably the closest you're going to get to it. And if every event, this was the first Black Mafia Battle League event, but if all of them are like this, then, you know, that might be the move for y'all, is to wait and go and see this Black Mafia Battle League, because the car was stacked. Everything was, you know, I mean, it was a perfect venue for this style. He wanted to bring it back to, you know, everyone standing around with two people in the middle, and then it definitely got that feel. It brought me back to, you know, to like high school when kids would try to battle, and everybody just be standing in a circle around them. So, you know, it was a really cool nostalgic feel to it. With all the intensity that you would expect from having an event in or near Detroit. So it was awesome, man. Definitely, like I said, big shout out to Cal, to Calico. My big shout out to Sierra. Big shout out to the Black Mafia Battle League, Landslide TV, all of that. I appreciate you guys allowing the MC Nerd Jock Show to be in the building with y'all. Yeah, man. Oh, before we get out of here with hip hop, we also got another big news that I can't end this episode without saying something about. Because this is my people's. This is, y'all know how I feel about this group right here. And they did announce that on May 3rd, we will finally get what we've been waiting for. We've been waiting patiently. I feel like every time I'm on here, I got a new single to play for you, but I still didn't know when the album was going to come. So here we go. I'm trying to factor in the way it... I'm trying to factor in the way it... I'm trying to factor in the way it... They cut it short. That's all we're getting. It is an official album announcement by Slum Village. Yes, you heard it right. The quote here says, "It's been a minute, but Slum is officially back. Let's have some fun." May 3rd, pre-order / save link in bio. FUN, fun, May 3rd. Fun track list, we got Welcome featuring Brittany Carter, produced by Young RJ. All Live featuring Abstract Orchestra, produced by Young RJ, which I love that they're using these live instruments all throughout the album, which is why you see certain artists like for this next feature. All Live Part 2, Sango, Fat Cat, and Daru Jones. Daru Jones, obviously a drummer, produced by Young RJ and Sango. Sango I'm not familiar with, I apologize. To the Disco featuring Abstract Orchestra, produced by Young RJ. 5 is Request featuring Abstract Orchestra, Early Mac, produced by Young RJ. They didn't credit my mans, but he's on that too. Eric Rob, oh no, that's on the Factor, I'm sorry. Then we have Yeah Yeah featuring Kareem Riggins, produced by T3, Kareem Riggins, and Young RJ. That's dope. Just Like You featuring Larry June, The Dramatics, which that one we already heard before. That was the lead single. Then FUN, produced by Young RJ, co-produced by Mason. Number 9, So Superb featuring Corday. Early Mac, produced by Young RJ, co-produced by Mason. Let's see. Track number 10, Keep Dreaming featuring Kareem Riggins, Fat Ray. Shout out Fat Ray, produced by Young RJ and Kareem Riggins. Number 11, Factor featuring Elijah Fox, Eric Roberson, produced by Young RJ. 12, Since 92, featuring Robert Glasper, produced by Robert Glasper and Riley Glasper. Interesting. So yeah, man, I'm really excited for that album. You already know how I feel about Slum Village. Dope. I'm really excited to have this music coming. What up, though? It's your boy GameCube, that dude, and I'm here with the legendary Philly battle rap legend Reed Dollaz here. I had a pleasure here having you on the NC Nerd Jock show. Man, you're a legend in the game. You've been doing this for a long time. I've been following you since Family Man shooting up the family van. So, definitely, when YouTube started, you know, you really made a name for yourself. So to see battle rap where it is now, where we have a battle rapper starting their own league, you know, what does that mean to you to be able to be a part of that?
I think it's dope, man. Like I said, 20 plus years in this shit, you know what I'm saying? To still be here today, still doing what I love, still seeing the culture grow. I think it's a beautiful thing. God is great for sure.
Definitely. For sure, man. And, you know, so being we got Detroit versus Philly tonight. So what is it about Philly and Detroit, honestly, that's like technical spitters? You know, we known for both cities, really known for having heavy spitters. What is it about the cities that you know, makes that staple?
I mean, it's the trenches. I don't think tonight is Philly versus Detroit. I think it's Reed Dollaz versus Calico. Because Detroit got a crazy love for me. I got a crazy love for Detroit. And they fuck with Kyle and Philly, too. So we're not going to do the Philly versus Detroit narrative. Philly, we look at Detroit like our cousins. Like, that shit, the trenches. We from the trenches. We know what's going on. We know where it's going down, what cities it's going down at. So
yeah.
We look at Detroit like us.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's a lot of love here for me. Not going to make it a Philly versus Detroit thing. I'm going to have this conversation with Kyle Cole tonight. And, yeah, we're just going to be just like that.
Definitely, definitely. Love to see it, man, because you're right. We are definitely, you know, we see a lot of Philly cats out here, Wallow and them be out here all the time. So definitely, there's a lot of love between the cities, for sure. So, you know, just let everybody know where they can follow you, what you got going on next, where they can keep supporting you.
Yeah, you know, we got more events coming up. You can follow me on Instagram, Reed_Dollars. Just tap in with me. We got a lot going on. Music on the way, videos, all that shit. We working.
Definitely, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, man.
Definitely, man.
What up, though? And we back. Yes, yes, yes. Feels good to be back, right? So, yeah. So, I think last time we did episode 1 and 2. So, episode 3. This one, I think this is Flesh. Fire Made Flesh, I think. Or Flesh Made Fire, I think it was called. And obviously this is big spoilers. This whole episode is spoilers, so I'm not gonna be playing my spoiler alert. Just expect on the Patreon there's gonna be some spoilers. And I'll put it in the title too, and I post it on Patreon. Fire Made Flesh. So the liner notes says the team is propelled into a tragic confrontation with an immortal mad scientist, which, if you know anything about X-Men, there's really only one immortal mad scientist that the X-Men have constantly found themselves in battle with for like eternity, pretty much. Back when Professor X could walk, he was already getting into it with this dude. Of course, later we find out that it was Mr. Sinister. We find out, you know, and I thought it was crazy because some of this I had to like research. I was like, oh yeah, okay, you know what I mean? Because some of this stuff, like, it's literally, I guess this was really cool, is like it's literally picking up right where it left off back in the day. So there's like, you really have to know. I would recommend anyone who's really trying to get into this new adaption of X-Men animated series to go back and watch the one that came out in the early 1990s, because it's literally picking right back up where it left off. So there's like references and stuff that they make, or they won't even necessarily go out of their way to explain certain characters, because obviously you would have seen them before if you're watching all the seasons together. So I just wrote, you know, I mean, I've been doing these notes, so I did notice, like, Jean, man, she always seems to be getting used for darkness, man. I remember, like, it happened once with Professor X. He got knocked out during the Dark Phoenix saga. And then his, you know, his dark side that he tries to keep on. You know, everybody got a little dark side to him, right, to some degree. And so the dark Professor X was going around just tormenting people. He's messing with Wolverine and stuff. that was one of my favorite episodes, actually, when Professor X lost it. And he was dark. And then it seems like Jean is like, oh man, Sinister always be kidnapping her, doing something, man. Always messing with Scott Summers' girl. So you gotta, yeah, Sinister always be messing with Scott Summers' girl, man. I don't understand it. And Scott Summers, man, he always seems so oblivious, man. Cyclops just be, I don't understand. I understand why Logan be calling him a Boy Scout now. So, we find out that apparently this whole time, like, I don't even know, I guess how long. I guess it would have been after the Dark Phoenix saga. I think they did have a moment where they went to Sinister's Island. They did. I feel like they did. I don't remember. I had to go back. Now I'm going to have to go back and watch it too. I tried to watch like the last few episodes of the last season before this X-Men 97 started, but I think I'm going to have to go back and like kind of watch the whole series, I think. That way I don't kind of miss any Easter eggs or something that's pulling from, you know, previous episodes. I do believe, though, so at some point, right, after the whole Phoenix saga, they get back to Earth. At some point, Sinister kidnaps Jean and obviously turns her into a clone. Or clones her, right? And which I'll get into what we eventually find out the name of the clone. So we have this moment where, you know, obviously in the previous episode, at the end of episode two, the real Jean shows up and she's like, I need the X-Men. So we find out obviously that there's a clone. And amongst that, when the clone is kind of like trying to deal with everything that's happening, she's got this brand new baby. Then what ends up happening? She starts to, she's like, this is dealing with a lot, right? So she starts to kind of like trip out. She can't control her powers. And then that's where things get interesting, right? Because you get the Magneto Rogue. Magneto and Rogue kind of gets exposed to Gambit. So, I mean, even though the last episode he kind of saw her like in his chambers, so he said, okay, so this is what we're doing. So what we're doing out here. But then he kind of got even more confirmation when the Jean's clone was messing with everybody and making different things happen inside the house. And like kind of messing with reality, and she was messing with Gambit and had Magneto and Rogue all tied up together. So that part was kind of funny. I think Gambit had a little one liner. He was like, "Gambit can't unsee that." I thought that was hilarious. And then eventually what ends, we kind of get into, they finally go get Sinister. They find this baby that, Sinister ends up taking the baby during all this, Scott and the clone's, son. And he's kind of infected with this virus. If you remember anything about the other ones, this virus was a whole, like basically shut all the X-Men down. Everybody got the virus and pretty much just it shut all the X-Men down, and Sentinels were able to come through and be a lot more damaging to the mutants. And then you end up getting into the time of Forge and Bishop, where they're like on the run and they're living underground from these Sentinels. So the virus is kind of the start of all that. Well, this baby, it was believed that Sinister was exposing this baby to the virus to try to make him immortal, like Sinister is. So Bishop ends up taking the baby to the future. And then towards the end of that episode, we learn the name of the clone. She says, "You can call me Madeline Pryor." Now, I guess this is a double spoiler, so I will say, spoiler alert. Press pause and fast forward now. Spoiler alert. Press pause and fast forward now. All right, now so now that we got that out of the way. So Madeline Pryor, in the comic books, ends up becoming like the Goblin Queen. So she ends up becoming like this dark, slightly like a dark gene, but it's not quite the Dark Phoenix. Like she's almost like a, she's on the border of like a witch, honestly, is what they end up like kind of portraying her as. And she is the mother of Cable, which, if you didn't know, Cyclops is Cable's mom, at least in this iteration. You know how it is with comic books. They change the stories quite often. So at least in this iteration, Cyclops and Madeline Pryor are the parents of Cable. Of course, Cable is the smart mouth hard, you know, hard ass future mutant who is going back in the early 90s X-Men series. We first are introduced to Cable when he's trying to fight Apocalypse with his son. And then him and his son end up getting split up, and Cable ends up going back in the past. And it, somehow he ends up, you know, being able to travel back in time in order to get out of the grasp of Apocalypse. And then that's when he meets the X-Men and so on, you know, and that whole thing starts, right? So I am sure... we'll see Cable again. And that brings us into episode four was Motendo and Life Death Part One. So Motendo was dope. It was a nice little like one off, giving Jubilee a lot more shine, because she really, I used to think that as a kid too. I'm like, man, why don't they show like more Jubilee, man? I felt like she almost disappeared at the end of the series, as opposed to the beginning when she's, I mean, that whole like first two episodes is all about Jubilee joining the X-Men. I mean, that's how the series starts. So I've always wondered why Jubilee never had more episodes kind of focused on her. So this was cool. She got an episode, her and Roberto, trying to play this video game. They end up getting snatched in. Shoot, I forgot my man's name. I didn't write that down. So if you're listening, holla at me, or I'm about to look it up too. Shoot, what is my man's name? Mojo. Yeah, that's right. His name is Mojo. Which he was weird back when. And he was weird. He's like a monster that like feeds off of raiding. Like he creates like these weird like scenarios where they're having to like you know, just like perform for TV, different galaxies and different dimensions and stuff. You know, what's crazy is it really looked like the first, like the Sega Genesis. And then once they got in there, it kind of looked like an arcade game, which I thought was dope because, which I thought was dope because it really kind of, to me, kind of looked like the old X-Men arcade game. So I thought that was like really dope that they incorporated that as Jubilee's trying to get through this video game that's based off of different events in her life, right? And she ends up meeting the older Jubilee, who basically tells her, like, hey, at some point you're going to have to grow up. Life isn't always fun and games. You know, I mean, you got to take some stuff serious at some point. And we got to see, like, some dope. We got to see Jubilee, like, at her peak, right? So we got to see her knowing how to do all these different cool things with her powers. Because all we really see her is her shoot out those little firework things out of her fingers. We never seen her really do anything else besides that. So the fact that she like was, you know, flipping and dipping and gliding and sliding and throwing all different types of stuff, you know what I mean? That was really dope for me to see, I thought personally. So then the tail end of that episode gets even weirder to an already weird episode. But we get to see a little bit of the Storm and Forge love story, the Forge and Storm love story. So, you know, which is shout out to the homie, DJ Ben Hameen. That's his favorite, power couple, Storm power couple. Cause obviously they just love matching up Storm with different people. I mean, she'd been with Wolverine. She's been with Forge. She's, you know, been T'Challa's queen. Like, she's, you know, I mean, she's kind of dated all over the Marvel Universe. They've rode her, you know, being with different people. Which, interesting, though, is, like, Forge, obviously, he's holding back the truth because he kind of helped design the collars that then led to the bullet that got rid of Storm's powers. So Storm felt like, okay, so now you're using me as like a way to get redemption for the sins that you already committed. And, you know, because I'm in this position based off of something that you created. So then Forge like tries to like say, nah, you know what I mean? My bad, but I still love you though. She was like, nah, son. She gave me a nice little smack. Heard that smack. I felt it through the TV. She gave me a clean. And then kind of ran off. And then that's when things get interesting, right? Because if you know anything about Storm's character, she always has these like parasitic, demonic, telepathic mutants that always seem to find, like, leeches. They always find her and leech on her and become you know, they become one. They become a parasite together. She had, what's my man's name? My man's, the Shadow King. That was, Professor X and the Shadow King. There used to be some, like, arch enemies. If you ever watched the series, it gets a little crazy at some point. But if you never watched the live action series, Legion. It's called Legion. The show Legion about Professor X's son. That show was fire to me. It was on FX. There's 3 seasons. You guys should definitely go check that out if you never have. But you'll see Shadow King on that as well. It's a pretty trippy show. But it's about Professor X's son, who in the comic books is ends up becoming like a supervillain almost. I think because he isn't always good with his powers. Um, Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to give like the little Wikipedia thing about him. I'm trying to see if they put him as a villain or a hero, because I feel like he's one of those anti-heroes. Yeah, see, he's the mutant son of Charles Xavier and Gabrielle Haller. Legion takes the role of an anti-hero who has a severe mental illness, including a form of dissociative identity disorder, in which each of his identities exhibits different mutant abilities or powers, which is kind of wild. So he's got like a split personality, and each of those split personalities have their own mutant abilities. It's just kind of wild. So he takes on the Shadow King as well. So we get some type of like demon or something that is after Storm, and this beast feeds on depression and misery. And obviously Storm has a very strong history of having those feelings. I wrote in this note, like, Storm mentally has immense trauma. I believe that her powers help her kind of overcome that. So Storm mentally has immense trauma, and I think that her powers, you know, help her kind of overcome some of that trauma. Because if you remember, like, when the Shadow King first gets a hold of Aurora, before she's Storm, she's like, you know, she's living in third world country on her own, just out in the streets as like a 5-year-old. I mean, she out here getting where she fit in. She was a little bit more like Gambit, you know what I mean? She was out in the streets, stealing apples if she need to, you know what I mean? Just trying to make it out here on the streets, homeless by yourself, 5 years old. And Shadow King tried to take a hold of her. Professor X had to help get the Shadow King up off her. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where this leads, because I think through that, so I missed a whole portion. I'm sorry. So obviously there's a Forge is like a master mechanic and builder, like Bob the Builder, Fix It Felix, mold them together times 20. He's that, you know what I'm saying? So he was like, yo, I got this little machine. I might be able to help you get your powers back. He tries it. Storm feels like she was made a fool, because she out here like, come to me, wind. Wind, move between my fingers. And there ain't nothing happening, right? So she starts getting in her feelings, takes it out on Forge, and then now she's like in a deep depression, because she's like, ain't, if this dude can't fix me, nobody can fix me. It's a wrap for me. I'm sure that's how she was feeling. So she was in her feelings, and then she got preyed upon by a beast that feeds on misery and depression. Ain't that something? So we'll see. We'll see where this takes us, because I think through this, she might be able to actually, like, she might have gotten her powers, but she has to break through this mental cage that she's kind of placed upon herself. And then from that, she'll, you know, regain her powers in such a force that Thor would be jealous. You know what I mean? So that's episode 4. It's a part life death is part 1. So we should see the second part of that, which I did have. I think we talked about the episode list before. I don't necessarily feel like going to look up all the different episode names right this second. But yeah, so, you know, obviously we'll get a part two at some point before this this season ends. And then, which brings us to episode 5, which I just got done watching right before I hopped on here with y'all. Whew, that was an intense episode. It's called Remember It. And I'm going to remember for sure. So it starts off. Man, Wolverine. This episode's got a lot packed in it, right? So, Magneto. Yeah, there's basically two stories going on, right? So you got Magneto, Gambit, and Rogue heading to Genosha. Because the UN's talking about, hey, we're going to finally recognize you guys. We're going to make you a part of the UN. You know, we're making you part of our society, our civilization, right? Making you part of the human race again. So they all had to do that, and we'll get to that. But while that's going on, there is a prestigious journalist, in my eyes... I would liken her to a Katie Couric or Gail King or somebody. Somebody that just be going, you know, they get the big interviews, right? So Cyclops, Beast, and Jubilee all sit down with Katie Couric. I'm going to just call her Katie Couric because I don't know what else to call her. I didn't write her name down. They sit down with her for different interviews and stuff, right? So Jubilee just talking about, you know, how it's a school, but they still get to do some crazy stuff. And the girl's kind of looking at her crazy, like, okay, maybe I need some little more supervision than what y'all getting. And then Beast, you know, sits with her and they're kind of like flirting back and forth, you know, Beast always, he's a ham. and then you get into, well, I'll get to Cyclops. So Wolverine, so while this has happened, like everybody else is kind of scattered, right? So Wolverine, I don't know, they never really show where Morph is, but Wolverine goes and checks on Jean because, the real Jean, not the clone Jean, the real Jean, Jean Grey, because, you know, she hasn't been herself, obviously. So Wolverine walks up on her. She's in the water, kind of like lifting up the water, splitting it like Moses and stuff. And she's just kind of like using the water as symbolism for her memories and, you know, how they, like a bubble, right? A bubble's kind of here, but then as soon as you try to access it, it bursts. So that's like her memories, right? That was the metaphor for that. Because she can't access her memories. So it's like a bubble. It's like a water bubble. It's there for you to look at. And like, man, that's it. But as soon as you try to touch, you try to feel that memory, then it's gone. That's what that metaphor was for. So that's why she has the water bubbles. And then... You know, Wolverine's being Wolverine, being the sweet, genuine guy that he actually is. And that's when Jean really sees him. She's not so caught up in Scott Summers, and she gives him a kiss. And Wolverine's like, nah, I want that, but we ain't doing that. Nah, this ain't the way it's supposed to be. He said, you're Jean Grey, that's Scott Summers, and that's how it is. He said, you just forgot. Wolverine's a better man than a lot of men. Because they was in the water. And Jean put it on him. And he said, no. Oh, I'm weak. But no. We can't do that. We can't do this. No. which is crazy because I think had the roles been reversed, Scott Summers would be like, nah, man, she kissed me, so I kiss back. I definitely think that Wolverine's a better man than Scott in that regard. And we later find out because Scott out here, he has an interview and he kind of goes off in the interview because he's Martin, because they're asking like, hey, you know, everything's going good in the interview. And then she says like, hey, you know, so how are things with the kids? Are you guys getting acquainted to having a child? And he's like, what you talking about? I ain't got no children. I ain't got no children. Gene and I don't got no children. Which he isn't necessarily telling lies, because him and Gene do not have any children together. He got a he got a son with Madeline, not Gene. So he kind of lied, and then the Katie Couric kind of pressed on him about it, like, "Hey man, I got your medical records. We seen the birth certificate. Somebody was born." And then that's when, you know, Cyclops kind of freaks out. He's like, all right, yeah, I got a baby. The doctor didn't even want to deliver. Well, you know what? I'm sick of y'all. You asking me all these questions and stuff, knowing I'm trying to mourn. Although she ain't, Katie Couric ain't, no. She's just like, oh, yo, my bad. So he storms off and he basically like tells her that if we weren't, yeah, I mean, if we were savages like y'all, y'all would be dead already. Which is kind of crazy because he said this all on camera, live in 4K. And so I'm just, you know, that ain't helping nobody stance on anything. And then he goes upstairs and he be mentally cheating. He was out there having having astro sex with Madeline. He was like talking about, yeah, she was like, yeah, just describe the baby to me. And he was describing the baby. And then they start kissing and stuff. And then Gene pops up in the astral, in the astral thought. It's funny, too, because the way they set it up is like you think that he's talking to Gene. And Gene's like trying to comfort him and like, hey, you know, tell me about the baby. Describe him to me. And then we've come to find out he was over there drifting away with Madeline. And she's supposed to be, we'll get to what she's supposed to be doing, but Gene come in and she said, homie, that was our thing, and now you over here with her. You better go and be with her then. If that's how you feel, you might as well just go ahead and be with her, acting like she ain't just kissed Logan. Yeah, I mean, Gene out here tripping a little bit too. So then they start arguing. And then all of a sudden, it looks like somebody just shot Gene in the forehead. Bow. With like some crazy JFK bullet or something. You know what I mean? And then that's that. We don't really see much more of what happens from that. All right, cut over to Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit. Magneto out here playing chess while everybody else playing checkers. He shows up there and they're like the council, Genosha, full of different people. It's got Moira. It's Moira, but I feel like they pronounced it because she's Scottish. It was more like a Moira. She's there. Professor's old girl, Banshee's new girl. Then who else is? Emma Frost is on there. I forget this dude's name. But he's like, he's part of this royal mutant family. And he was a part of the Dark Phoenix saga. So he's like one of these like old, I forgot my man's name. But he's got like black hair that he keeps in a ponytail and he's like super strong. So he's there. Emma Frost is there. Calypso from the Warlocks is part of the council. And Madeline Pryor is part of the council. Same with Nightcrawler. And so they're all part of this council. they decided that they want Magneto to be their leader and represent Genosha. And he had one condition. He wanted Rogue to be a part of it. Which obviously, you know, we just mentioned him and Rogue had a little thing going on. So she accepts, which I think she's kind of tripping. And Gambit did the right thing. She finally goes and tells Gambit, you know, after Magneto asks Rogue, like, hey, I want you to join me here in Genosha. And she's like, stop lying. For real? All right, maybe. I'll think about it. I'll call you. Okay. So she goes crying. She goes, sees Gambit. And then they kind of hash it out. And she's like, yo, but I can't touch you. As much as I love you, man, I can't touch you. You can't really physically be together like that. You know what I mean? So, and this is like one of the only dudes that can. We got a little chemistry going. You feel me? And Gambit was like, well, until you figure out what you're trying to do, we just going to be friends. Because I ain't doing all this. Sorry. Which I think he was in the right. So then they start to go to this, you know, big dinner, like the big gala, before like the, you know, the Genosha's officially, you know, instated into the UN. And I did notice something that I wonder if anyone else noticed, and we'll see if it manifests in any way. But around like the 20 minute mark, I think right before there's a fireworks scene, right before like Magneto looks and there's fireworks going off right before he goes into the gala. Right when he looks up into the sky and the fireworks first start going, there's an image in the sky. It almost looks like a person. And I'm pretty sure it's the Watcher. So you guys tell me what you think, if you saw what I saw. But I'm pretty sure it was the Watcher. Which is one of my favorite Marvel characters just because it was always cool. It's like us. The Watcher is us, basically. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it. But if you haven't seen it, just come back. I won't be offended if you don't listen to this right when it comes out. Come back. Like Ice Cube told, like Craig told Smokey, hey, come back. You feel me? So, So they end up getting sabotaged at this gala. Cable tries to save his mom. He says, like, yo, shut the music off. Everybody shut the music. Y'all, you shut the music. You got to evacuate. He's coming. He's trying to save everybody. But then his timer goes off for him being in the past. So he floats to the back to the future. He did get to see his mom. She's like, I'm sorry, yo. He's like, I'm sorry, moms. And she's like, okay. It was good seeing you. And then boom. That's when it happens. You know what I mean? You get the mastermind. Sentinels coming in. Three-headed monster. And just destroy and level all of Genosha. Man, Magneto. The X-Men tried to do their thing. Magneto ends up saving Rogue and Gambit. But gets gets done up quick with the Warlocks. And then we see Gambit make the ultimate sacrifice, and he told the Sentinels, my name's Gambit, you better remember it. Thus the title of the show. And I ain't gonna front, man, I almost shed a tear for my homie Gambit. That's one of my dogs, man. I've been a big Gambit fan since way back when. I used to have the Gambit toy, one of the big ones. Back, I mean, they make them. I feel like they make them all that size now. But when I was a kid, they had the regular action figure, and then they had, if you was lucky, you found like a bigger size one, like the ones they make now that are little, you know, a couple feet tall, like 2 feet tall, or a foot and a half tall, something. The ones were not even a foot. I don't think those action are barely a foot before. Now these ones are like 2 feet, 2.5. Maybe that's a bit much. Maybe 2 feet. Yeah, man. Pour out some for the homie. Pour some out for the homie Gambit. one time for the homie Gambit. They did him dirty, man. I mean, he went out. He went out in high fashion. You know what I mean? He did what he was supposed to do. But, Remy LeBeau, man. Remy LeBeau. That's the homie. One love, man. This one's for you. Yeah, man. This X-Men series, man. It's not for the weak, man. It's definitely intense. Which it was starting to get intense at the end of the series back in the 90s. You know, we was growing with it, so it was a little. It wasn't as bad, but I'll be honest. There's certain like a couple of these. Like episode 3 and episode 4, I don't know that I kind of had to fast forward a bunch of scenes for my kids because it was just I didn't want them to be scared. I didn't want them going to sleep like seeing some of these images and being scared at all. So I don't know that I'm pretty sure that this X-Men. I mean, I have to go back and listen to some of the interviews as this show was just premiering. I don't know that this is really geared towards kids like it was the first go around. This feels like it's geared towards me, like my generation, the kids who the adults who watched it as kids. That's what it feels like. I'd love to hear, you know, what other people, what you guys think. Like I said, I'm gonna go back and listen to some interviews from everybody involved with the show and see what they have to say, you know, upon it being released at the beginning of April. So I'll go back and see if there's some interviews from that and see if that'll give us a little bit more feedback, you know, enlightenment into their goal with the show. You know what I mean? So I appreciate you guys, man. We kicked it for almost an hour for this Patreon. So like I said, the hip hop portion is gonna be a mix. So you guys are, let me know. You know what I mean? Let me know if y'all feeling this. Definitely when it comes to Patreon, since you know you guys are blessing us with some funds to have this had this relationship. So it's, you know, it's a feedback. This is not just me. Hey, y'all got to deal with whatever. You know what I mean? So if you start, you know, getting into it and you're like, hey, man, we like this, but we could necessarily do without this. Or could you do it? Maybe do it this way. I'm definitely open for a discussion when it comes to Patreon for sure. Now, the free episodes, y'all just going to have to chalk that one up. And I appreciate y'all for real. But I'm just going to do how I do. But like I said, the Patreons, if like the format, you know what I mean? If y'all want me to kind of do it a certain way, I'm definitely a lot more open in the Patreon than I am with the free episodes. So once again, appreciate y'all, and I hope you have a blessed day, and we'll be back next week. MC Nerd Jock Show was brought to you by the United Negro Podcasting Guild of America, where we be podcasting. This episode was recorded at an undisclosed location in Grosse Pointe Woods, Michigan. Edited in an undisclosed studio in New Baltimore, Michigan. All episodes of the MC Nerd Jock Show are brought to you by GC Productions, you already know. The intro and outro of the MC Nerd Jock Show are produced by none other than the legendary producer, Slumber Logic.